Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the KE Report, our weekend show this weekend, focusing on some of the market moves broadly in the first half of this show, recapping inflation data, looking ahead to next week with the inauguration of President Trump, as well as a few central bank meetings, but the big central bank meetings coming the week after. And in the second half of the show, we're going to be talking energy. Just as a reminder, this weekend, Chad and I are at a number of conferences in Vancouver. As you're listening to this on Saturday, we will be at the Metals Investment Forum. And then Sunday, Monday, we will be at the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference. If you are in Vancouver and at any of the conferences, please drop us a line. We're happy to meet up with you on the floor of the show. Chad is currently on his way up to Vancouver, but he will be joining us in the second half of the show. To kick off this show, I am chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also editor of the Mark to Market website. I'll include a link in the show notes to Mark's website so you can keep up to date with pretty much his daily commentary on what's moving markets and key economic data. Mark, we can start off with the key economic data from this last week. It was U.S. inflation data. We had the CPI and PPI that was released. Look, to me, it was more or less a non-event. The markets didn't seem to have too much volatility around those numbers. And quite frankly, from my takeaway from that data is everything was in line with expectations. Inflation does seem a little bit stuck above the Fed's target 2%, but it's also not screaming higher. So in a bit of limbo here. Mark, give us a quick rundown of that inflation data this week, please.
And I think you're right, Corey, that the both measures, the PPI and the CPI, were largely in line with expectations. I'd say, if anything, the core CPI was a little bit softer than expected. Actually, it slipped a little bit to 3.2% from 3.3%. But of course, the real takeaway from both the CPI and PPI is, what does it mean for Fed policy? And what does it mean for the PCE deflator that's reported later this month? And that's, of course, the measure of inflation, the Fed targets. So after we get the PPI and CPI, what it looks like is that the PCE deflator is going to come in at around 2.6%, up from 2.4%. And that's consistent with a 0.2% increase we saw in the headline CPI. The core PCE deflator, though, looks unchanged at 2.8%. So what does this all mean? It means that the Federal Reserve is not going to be in any hurry to raise interest rates. Remember what the sequence of events has been, that strong U.S. jobs data, stronger than expected for the month of December. And then we had these inflation numbers, which were firm, but in line with expectations. So the market feels very confident that there's not going to be any Fed action at this month's meeting. That's on the 29th, the meeting concludes. But I think what's happened this week is that comments from Federal Reserve Governor Waller. And Waller's important because, one, he was perceived to be a hawk. And secondly, he's seen to be a possible candidate to replace Powell as a chair when his term expires. So Waller is basically, even though, as I mentioned, his reputation as a hawk, he's been sounding very dovish in the past few days, including playing up the possibility that the rates get cut here in the first half of the year. And Waller's argument is basically, it's pretty straightforward and simple. I can sum it up in a couple of sentences. It says, most of the things that go into the core PCE deflator, those prices are rising at a slower rate than 2%. Those components that are rising at a faster than 2% rate are about a third of the basket, but they are the part of the basket that is not directly observed, like the price of eggs directly observed. But how do you calculate owner's equivalent rent, for example? These, he says, are imputed. And that's where the inflation, the residual inflation is to be found, is in these imputed costs, not in the directly observed costs. So Waller says we, policymakers, ought to put more weight on those prices that we can actually directly measure, less emphasis on those imputed costs. So bottom line, Waller, a hawk from the Fed, sounds a bit dovish. And what the market has done is, after the jobs data, early on Monday, as this week began, the Fed funds futures had the first Fed cut, I should say the next Fed cut, priced not until 2026. And despite the data we've had, it's not just inflation data, but we've had stronger than expected retail sales, especially those core retail sales, stronger than expected industrial production data. And the market, though, seems to be settling with the next Fed cut to be somewhere around the middle of the year, whether it's June or July. It's very closely priced for around then. So I think that's really the takeaway this week is, after the strong jobs data, inflation data, the strong real sector data, the Atlanta Fed now saying the economy's tracked 3% growth in Q4, the market feels comfortable, or more comfortable than it did, sort of settling around the middle of the year for the next Fed rate cut.
So overall, again, the U.S. economy seems to be doing okay. Yes, jobs data has been slowing broadly, and as I said, inflation is kind of stuck. It does seem like a lot of eyes still being very much on inflation to target when the Fed is going to cut next, but the market's coming a bit more in line with what the Fed told us recently in their dot plot. What about the energy sector right now? A lot of people say just how much energy, oil, natural gas plays into this inflation data. And look, we've had a strong move in oil and natural gas, especially in this last month. Mark, is that a concern then that will trickle into future inflation data?
I think, two things. One is how we measure it. And of course, the price of gasoline goes up. As consumers, we feel it's like a tax on consumption. The more money we spend on filling the car with gasoline, the less money we have on other discretionary for discretionary purposes. So typically, I think the Federal Reserve has been right to see higher energy prices as really being a deflationary, even though it raises the price of some goods. Remember, inflation is really the general price level. But I think, to your point of why, like maybe thinking more about why energy prices have gone up, partly, as we've been in a bit of a cold snap, not only in the United States, but Western Europe as well. So one is just seasonal weather. Secondly, the US recently announced new tighter sanctions on Russia and the energy sector, including shipping and insurance. And this is seen to be really a significant tightening of the sanctions, and will be affecting the supply of Russian oil in the market. Already, by citing vessels, it looks like China and India may have become more reluctant to take that Russian oil, at least initially. And thirdly, I'd say with oil, as you know, the government estimates how the private sector inventories are every week. And for 8 weeks in a row now, U.S. inventory of oil has been falling. And so you couple the weather, the geopolitics, with this more of a technical thing about the reduction of U.S. inventories. And I think you have this squeeze in oil prices. But as far as the overall inflation, so on one hand, we all know that U.S. 10-year yields have jumped over 100 basis points since the Fed cut interest rates in September. And so I try to decouple or try to unpack why those interest rates rise. And there's an inflation component to it. But that inflation component, I can look at, like, to say, the 10-year break even. So I'm looking at the US 10-year inflation protected security, and I'm comparing that yield to just a conventional 10-year note. And that has widened out by about 10 to 15 basis points since the end of September. So it is an increase of inflation expectations, and we've seen an increase in inflation expectations in surveys like the preliminary University of Michigan survey for January. But I'd say the larger part of the rise of interest rates seems to be a readjustment of market expectations about the overnight interest rate. And so I'd say that so far, the rise in oil prices hasn't really fueled or spurred higher inflation expectations, at least here in the States.
Okay. Hey, well, that's something for us to watch because oil, after this strong last, let's say, 1 month run, recently hit a 5 month high right around that $80 a barrel. This also ties into Trump's inauguration coming on Monday and the whole theory of he is pro energy. His whole term is drill, baby, drill. Now, I know coming up in the back half of the show, we're having on Dan Steffens. He doesn't think that that is going to filter through to increase U.S. production. But Mark, you're more of a generalist here. What do you think? Do you think Trump could do anything that could increase U.S. production early on when he enters office?
What I'm watching is that it seems to me that the shale patch might be peaking. It might be a technological peak. That we've exploited this incredible technological innovations. We've gotten a lot of the sort of the relatively easier access. And so I think that the Treasury Secretary nomination of Bessent had talked about having his policies. I think people are calling it the threes, 3% GDP, which it looks like we've grown in Q4. He wants to reduce the budget deficit to 3% of GDP, and he wants to boost U.S. Oil or energy output by 3 million barrels. I think it's going to be tough. I think that, we know what's going to have to happen. In order to do that, more of the country's land, more of the federal government's land has to be turned over or made accessible to oil companies. We'll have to see if that actually happens, but that's the direction that we have to go. And like I say, it seemed to me just like you say, from a very general level, that the shale is, if we haven't reached a peak in shale output, we're very close to it. And so the new oil is what's happened with the renewables, that even though there's been an increase in renewable energy generation, there's also greater demand for oil, partly because the supply of renewable energy is not enough to offset the growth in the overall supply of energy. And I'm afraid that's what's going to happen here in the States too, that even if the new administration is able to find ways to get more oil, there'll be other things that seem to be maturing, like the shale patch.
So when Trump enters office, look, it's going to be a holiday in the US on Monday, but there are rumors that there could be a vast array of economic or of executive orders being signed. Anything on your radar here, Mark, that could directly impact markets right away early next week?
Yeah, I think that this is really the bet that people are making on some of these event websites. We can bet on certain events. There seems to be strong bets in favor that there's going to be announcements, tariff announcements within the first 48 hours. But when we think it through, remember, it's not just what the U.S. does. And when you look at these different scenarios, what the U.S. does is important, but what's also important about how the markets will react is whether other countries retaliate. How quickly they retaliate. Canada and Mexico, ironically, the US's trading partners, part of the USMCA, have already threatened tit for tat retaliation if the US puts sanctions on them. And of course, this is the USMCA and there is a conflict resolution mechanism. But I think that most people are going to be watching tariffs on day one. The deregulation, the increased energy, I think that'll all be coming. And I think to keep in mind just the bold plan, right? The larger plan, I think, is something like this, that Trump administration realizes that this is a one term and that it has to, that the biggest stuff has to be done in the first 2 years before the congressional midterm elections. So I think there's no reason to doubt that the Trump administration 2.0 is going to hit the ground running. And I think that we should all be prepared for a lot of drama in the first part of next week.
Yeah, all eyes really just being on these first 2 years. I've heard so much about how important these first 2 years will be since it is such a red sweep from that election. And hey, we all know how quickly Trump can work. So, boy, oh boy, next week, probably volatile on the back of that. But this last week, it was a strong week for the markets. The S&P rebounded up over 3% as we're chatting. It's back slightly above that 6,000 level, which, hey, the all-time high recently was the 6,100 level. Mark, what's the market pricing in here? Is this just a bounce and more of a downtrend? Give us your take on the market rebound this last week.
Yeah, I think that this is still part of this Trump trade. I think people expect a deregulation, corporate tax cuts. Remember, is the tax plan that he passed in 2017, that's set to expire. So he wants to extend that. That's at least from the Treasury Secretary's confirmation hearings, that is the first big emphasis, first big priority, extending, possibly making permanent those tax cuts. I think we should also be prepared for more M&A activity. I think there's a broad criticism of the Federal Trade Commission under Biden. And I think that whether it's private equity whether it's in the public markets. I think we should be prepared for more mergers and acquisitions. That this is the economy's consolidation, and it's sort of switching, like sort of switching the assets around a little bit, but in the direction of greater concentration. I think also one of the things we've been talking about for a while has been in the Trump's first term, there was an attempt, they thought, to privatize, to withdraw the government from its ownership of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which, as you know, they buy those mortgages that the banks generate. And this talk that both of those can be privatized again, that is, the government to pull back. Both stocks are relatively cheap, call it $5 to $6 a share. They've been very volatile. Already this year, they're up like something like 75, 95%, as people, including myself, think that part of the deregulation move is going to be pulling the government out of those two.
Since we're early on in the year, then, Mark, last year really seemed to be dominated by AI, that trade continuing, but also a rotation of money into the broader markets and some of those lagging sectors. What are you buying right now? Where do you see some leadership early on in these markets?
Well, I don't. I'm not smart enough to figure out the next big thing, but it does seem that from what I read, that after AI, it's like sort of like how applying AI, what is partly what it means is other like computer revolution, if you will, quantum computing. So there's an ETF that I bought. Stock symbol is QTUM, a U.S. ETF for quantum computing, but it takes a wide like slice of what counts. So the chips would be in there as well, for example. So I like the idea as far as the theme, quantum computing. I think that AI, it sort of builds on, it's not equal to, but can assume or absorb part of the AI meme, and focusing on quantum computing, which I think is going to be, we think about AI and, whether it's Claude or Bing or whatever, as what like incredible like access that's given us over the last couple of years. But quantum computing, I think, is going to be just as revolutionary. Think about just security. Think about how crypto works and how quantum computing can change all that.
Is this just more big tech then? Quantum computing to me also means that, hey, I'm sure big tech's going to have a hand in it. We've already had news out of big tech companies on this sector.
Yeah, I think that you're right. I think that's part of the strength and the weakness of it is it's sort of just a refined tech story. It's like the next part of tech. But I agree with you that it does have that overlap of there's profit taking in tech, there'll be profit taking in the quantum element too.
All right, let's move over to commodities then. US dollar mostly flat this week, right around 109, but that hasn't slowed down gold's run. Gold is up, I believe, a little over $100 just from the beginning of this year, as we're recording this right at around 2750. What's driving gold? Because some of the news that I saw, ceasefire out of the Middle East, you would think that could pull gold down. That didn't have an impact at all, but I guess these wars, I hate to say it, are kind of old news for these markets. So, what's the driver behind this gold strength to start the year?
First, I agree with you. It's really, gold was at the end of last year, we were sort of probing 2,600 in the spot market. I think there's been three things or so that have really helped gold. One is that as China reported its reserve figures, they acknowledge that PBOC has resumed buying gold. So one is, that there's a big, so if you want to buy gold, you now feel a little bit more comfortable or confident. There's a big player behind you that's also going to be buying gold. Secondly, I think that there's a lot of geopolitical uncertainty. It's not just about the Middle East war, Ukraine and Asia. I think it's just the great uncertainty. Trump's refusing to rule out taking the canal, Panama Canal, taking Greenland or part of Greenland. I just think that in this great uncertainty, a gold looks like as a place to hang out. And thirdly, I'd say that I think people see some financial assets being rich. And gold as it had pulled back to the lower end of its range, looked like a lower risk buying opportunity. But we're stalling here. Sort of where we stalled in November was around 27.21 in the spot market. We stalled at middle of December, 27.26. And this week, it looks like we're stalling around 27.25. So I just think that we've moved from the lower end of the range to the upper end of the recent range. Again, only it's about a 2 month range. So I like gold. It hasn't really proven itself. And I think that if you think that U.S. rates have come close to a peak and that the dollar may be vulnerable to a buy the rumor, sell the fact on either Trump or his tariffs, I can see gold going higher, but I'm afraid it will have to first do a little bit of work still, maybe below 2,700.
Really seems to me like gold is repriced, though. If we're talking 2,700, these are record levels for gold. And yeah, look, we were chatting about 2,000 being a key level. This whole repriced gold price, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, when I look at a chart, it seems to me that the big push into gold, maybe two big pushes. One is the great financial crisis. And secondly, when the US, Europe froze Russia's reserves after the invasion of Ukraine. And so I think that the concern, I think, is something like this, that maybe going forward, that the dollar, which had been this public good in effect, that the US provided, not selflessly, of course, there's great self-interest in it as well, but this public good, making trade easier when you have like one basic, when you have a numerator, they call it, you have one currency that's really the key. And so I think people think that world is coming to an end. And the re-election of Trump, I think, partly fits into that narrative. It's a throwback, I think, to a pre-free trade era. I mean, in effect, I think Trump is right that before we had free trade, tariffs, how high the federal government in the US funded itself. Tariffs. And that was really the debate throughout like the 19th century, whether you have a high tariff or a low tariff. And so instead, by having free trade, that gets rid of the tariff as a significant source of revenue. So Trump wants to bring that back. And I think that uncertainty about the role of the dollar, the role of this public good, I think also favors gold. And then if you think that US interest rates have had this big rally, are going to also come back off. That we came close enough to, people are talking about 5% on the 10-year. We got about 480, and we've backed off to, say, the high 450s. If you think that we have lower interest rates coming, I think that's also, or if you think the dollar is going to be this buy the rumor, sell the fact, either one of these, I think, would say that the gold pullback, which we look for it to buy again at the lower end of the range, close to 2,600.
Mark, I'm curious. In the sphere that you work in, mostly in the currency sector, but again, in New York, around New York, and throughout the country through your travels, are you hearing anybody talk about gold stocks and the potential undervalued nature of them compared to this whole new gold price we're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I do hear people talking about how the gold miners have lagged, and there's this hope, of course. It's sort of like we talk about in the bond market, people trying to pick a top to JGB that's a low point in the yields, and how people have dubbed that the widow maker. And I worry that my friends for a long time, because gold, as you say, it's not just that gold is high now, it's been sort of consolidating near record levels. But the gold miners have lagged, and I think that I know many people who are trying to stick with the gold miners, thinking that there's going to be a catch-up. I can't really explain why they haven't participated, but I think that gold, besides a metal that you can take from the earth, it also has this financial role that it plays. And I think that's been more the driver than the gold bullion itself from the mines, more what gold represents rather than the actual physical.
Yeah, it's just been interesting to see, right? People that wanted to play that gold price thought that it would go higher. They've done well simply buying gold or even buying leveraged gold ETFs rather than diving down into the stocks. Maybe that environment changes. Just interesting to hear what you're hearing. Let's also talk Bitcoin because look, Bitcoin up above 100,000. It even touched 105 today. This has been a strong run for Bitcoin. Could very much just be the fact that Trump is entering office. But look, this is a volatile market, but it's back over 100,000. What's important in your eyes?
Yeah, but I don't think this is just that Trump is getting to office and he's surrounding himself by people that are sympathetic to crypto. But I think that among the executive orders that are being rumored will be some recognition of crypto and Bitcoin in particular. Not only is there some pressure for the federal government, but even some state governments talking about having some kind of Bitcoin in reserve. I think it's really foolhardy, but what can he do? I mean, I think there's some widespread. I think that this anticipation is really one of the things that with Trump's election, with these executive orders, crypto will go like legit. It will go like more mainstream, people think. Because the people will be helped by this, even this talk about having the U.S. They would need to change the rules, the Federal Reserve's mandate. That the Federal Reserve now, I don't believe that it's mandated to hold anything besides gold and some hard currencies in reserves. To change that, to hold crypto, probably would require some kind of congressional action. But I think that who will it help if the U.S. have to, in effect, sell U.S. Treasury bonds, that's to raise money to buy Bitcoin? I think the people who would be helped would be people who currently own Bitcoin. And I think that's why it would be done, is there's a vested interest here. But I think that's what's driving this, is the anticipation that under Trump's second administration, to take positive action early on that's going to bring Bitcoin more to the mainstream, including this talk about having, whether it's the federal government or state governments, to have reserves in crypto.
Oh, that would be just a huge driver, though, wouldn't it? If we saw something out of the US on the government front actually buying crypto and holding it into reserves, even on top of what we're hearing from potential companies doing that, that follow through would really be what's important here because we've had so much talk around the potential of crypto being added to either large institutions, large organizations, or governments' reserves. But we haven't seen much follow through yet, have we?
Yeah, so I'd say that it's people are like, they're not sure yet. So there's just like some people trying to anticipate this. But I think that this is one of the biggest rallies Bitcoin has had since the election. And even now, Bloomberg has a report out saying that the talk is that Trump could release an executive order making crypto a national priority as soon as day one of his term. So I think this is why I say this is partly, it seems to me, the part of the Trump trade. People are anticipating some actions on his first day in office that will shake things up.
All right, Mark, let's shift our focus to next week then. Couple central bank meetings, but it's the following week that's most important. And again, Trump's inauguration, so probably some executive orders. Who knows? Maybe even some tariffs. What's going to royal markets? What do we need to expect out of central banks?
So yeah, so next week the key, I think, the three big events you've got, as you mentioned, the inauguration, which, as you say, is going to take place when the U.S. markets are closed. So that's going to be thinner markets, which allows for more volatile action. Secondly, we've got it's already, we're already far enough into January. We're going to get the January preliminary PMI. And the end of the week, the feature, the highlight is the Bank of Japan meeting, and that's one of the developments this week. The market feels more confident after two senior BOJ officials talk, the governor and the deputy governor. The market feels much more comfortable about a rate hike from the Bank of Japan at the end of the week. The market's now got almost 25 basis point hike priced in. This had initially sent the dollar down to about 155 against the yen, from which it's recovering a bit here today. But I think that was the two big things, really, I mean, for this week, driving the yen higher. Expectations of the BOJ to hike rates and the softer US 10-year yield. What this means, too, though, I think, is if the BOJ does not hike rates, that the yen will sell off hard. On the other hand, this remember what happened in July when the bank raised interest rates? It caused a bit of turmoil in the markets. This was the unwinding of the carry trade and that. And so, what happens now? I think that the Bank of Japan is going to raise rates unless Trump's first couple of days really roil the capital markets. The markets go crazy, and I can't really define crazy. I think it's one of those things, you know it when you see it. The markets go crazy. I think that the BOJ will have to hold off raising rates. But barring that, I think the BOJ is set to hike rates, and I think that it might even be a dovish hike. And by that, I mean they hike rates, but indicate that it's going to be a while before they hike rates again. By a while, I mean the market doesn't have the next hike priced in until late this year.
So before I get you out of here then, Mark, just a broad comment, high-level view of the markets and investors' positioning here. Do you consider the bull versus bear narrative to be maybe a coin flip right now? Are investors taking a more defensive position? Are they all bulled up? Where do you see positioning of investors?
Yeah, I think that people are still long. I think that once again, we had this pullback and people were really eager to buy the pullback and to jump into those same names that they were in previously. the market does still scare me. My sense is most broadly that there might be some more gains to be made. People want to be in this for the ride of Trump's early days. But I think that in the other markets, we might be prone to a little bit of buy the rumor, sell the fact, but not right away. Maybe by the end of next week or so, it begins materializing. So I'm trying to be cautious here, thinking that we've gone a long way. I'm thinking about the bonds, thinking about the dollar, and even with the stock market, how quickly we've bounced back here. It sort of tells me where people's biases are. I don't want to fight it quite yet, but I think it's getting a bit overdone again.
All right, Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also editor of that Mark to Market website, which I mentioned I will be posting a link in the show notes to. Mark, great having you on the show. Thank you very much for your time. Everyone, stick around. Going to be right back covering the energy sector.
Good luck, everybody. Thank you.
Al Corlin's firm, AB Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.